not always going to find people who are ready for you or too ready to listen to you. But at the same time, you just have to push the boundaries. If you fail, just try again and see if it will get you somewhere.
There are certain aspects, yes, you definitely need to look confident, but they, no matter how much you dress, if you're not confident inside, it will not come out. You'll still be the timid person. Your expression, the way you carry yourself, will still be a look of timidity.
What are little girls made of? What are little girls made of? Sugar and spice and all things nice. That's what little girls are made of. Hello there, I'm Navelia Malloy, and this is Hungry Woman at Work, the podcast for the woman who wants to thrive at work without losing her soul. So I wanted to add a touch of cheekiness to today's episode, hence starting with that nursery rhyme. Do you remember it? What are little girls made of? Now to some, it's really just a nursery rhyme, but to many of us, it perfectly sums up what we've been told from a young age. Little girls are meant to be. Sugar and spice, and all things nice. And I thought that would make a nice segue into today's topic, which is all about women and the confidence gap in the workplace. I had you at confidence, right? Keep listening, because this episode's for you. Now, our regular listeners know that we typically feature a woman who's thriving in her area of life, whatever kind of work that may be. But today, we're switching things up a bit. I did a survey a while back and asked some friends and listeners what they'd like to hear more of on the show. And someone, actually a few people, suggested we occasionally featured a round table discussion with a few women talking about a topic or an issue that's topical. You've asked and we've listened. Now there's a lot of buzz online and offline around this idea that women are often overlooked for promotion because, quote unquote, we are lacking in confidence. Now, there are varying schools of thoughts on this. Is it really a lack of confidence, or is it me choosing to walk in humility? Is it being afraid of having a voice, or is it rather the fear of the backlash that comes with having that voice? Like the late Maya Angelou said, does my sassiness upset you? Is it a confidence gap, or is it a bigger cultural and societal narrative that says women, like little girls, should only be sugar and spice and all things nice? Take a listen as the three of us give our take on it. Before we get into it though, just a shout out to our sponsor, Audiodacious. If you'd like to start your own podcast or need a voiceover or any audio services, please check out audiodacious.com.
Give your brand a voice with Audiodacious. For podcasting, IVR and audio content solutions, check us out at audiodacious.com.
Good day, Mwansa and Kodani, and welcome to Hungry Women at Work.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So yeah, Mwansa Chokolo is in studio with us today, and she's an actuary working in the insurance industry. And on the line from Cape Town, we are joined with Kodani Nemate, a manager from Harambe Youth Employment Accelerator. So ladies, as I've mentioned to you, today is a little bit of a different episode in that we've got a panel interview, which we've never had before on Hungry Women at Work. So thank you for making history with us on the show today.
It's a pleasure.
Kodani, I want to start with you. I mean, we've, the past few weeks, as I've mentioned to both of you, I've been inundated with articles and conversations and questions around this big issue called the confidence gap, and especially amongst working women. So it generally goes something like this. The reason that there are not more women in positions of leadership at work is because women are not as confident as their male colleagues. That's how the conversation usually starts. And then I read an article on Forbes, which says that, I mean, this quote just stood out for me, which is that many women struggle with new challenges because they haven't internalized the feeling of competence that comes with success. Okay, so there's one school of thought that says there's clearly a confidence gap. There's a confidence issue where women are not presenting themselves enough in boardrooms or in workspaces. But then there are other schools of thoughts too. But I want to start us off with that viewpoint. And Kodani, in your work you're working with a lot of young people. And getting them ready for their first jobs and entry into employment. So tell us your thoughts on just this perceived thing about the confidence gap and through especially your experience in working with youth, how that's played out.
Okay. From my experience while working with young people, in general, it depends on where they're coming from and how they were raised. This could be the school that they probably went to or the communities that they interact with. For young women, it's a lot which has to do with how their communities or their peers have kind of like instill certain things within them. And at times it's a culture issue whereby you need to break down some barriers or you need to break down some of their perceptions about how they should act and how they should present themselves. In most instances, young women are cautious versus a young man who would be adventurous and would try to explore things, which then brings in the confidence element whereby they don't have fear for failing, whereas with young women, it could be fear of failure, so they'd rather not even try in those instances. But it's also because of what they have been told so many times that it stops them from believing in themselves in a way.
Sure, Katie. I think you've kicked us off with so many strong points already. So I mean, the one is really around what you've been taught while growing up. So it actually really starts at the family level already, right? So the home that you brought into, the supporting community around you, the perceptions we're creating around boys are allowed to be adventurous and take risks and girls need to be a lot more cautious and we need to really consider things before we do them and even before we say them out loud. I also like this point that you've touched on the fear of failure. Tell me how are you able to, just in your personal capacity or maybe through your work, how are some of the ways that one can redress or speak into that?
I think it's just breaking down the notion or the idea that you have to be perfect because in most cases, people don't want to do anything because they feel like if I should say something, it has to be right. If I should try something, it has to be what it's supposed to be. Versus if I fail 6 times, maybe the 7th time I'm going to succeed.
Yeah.
So in terms of fear, or rather most people who have succeeded in life, it's because they have the idea or the belief that if I don't get it this time, I'll get it next time.
Right.
And that's the one way you can actually deal with fear, that if this is not right, let's see what happens. So instead of thinking only of the negative of what if, consider what if I succeed versus what if I don't succeed.
Sure, like that. Mwansa, I want to give you a chance. So you are in the finance sector. Yeah. I mean, have you seen this reflected? Is there a confidence gap in the sector of work that you're in and in the line of work that you're doing?
Yeah, definitely. And I'm a very good example of that. Because it's definitely, I mean, in the finance, generally it's surrounded by male. It's a male-dominated industry.
Yes.
But I found in my own personal experience that even when I was looking for a new job, so I'd worked for a certain company for about 9 years. And then when I decided to leave that job and enter another job, I didn't sell myself. I didn't feel confident enough to believe that I had the skills I had gained enough skills to transfer into another role. And it's almost like I was begging for the job.
Sure.
And only later on, I realized, what? I actually can do this job. I could have negotiated for more. I literally did not even negotiate my salary. They gave me an offer and I was like, oh, thank you so much. and then later on, I was like, what?
Because you've been told so long, just be grateful, right? Exactly, just be grateful.
Exactly. And to be honest, I've learned a lot since then to understand. I came in the job, I did move sectors. So I used to work in the pensions industry and then I moved into life insurance. So when I was looking for this new job, I thought there's no way I can, you know, I don't know enough, so I can't sell myself. And then I get into this job and I'm like, wait, all the skills I learned in a different sector, I can actually transfer to this sector. And I did my job really well, if I say so myself.
Yes, yes. Well, you can. Thank you.
And then, so now I've learned that I could have actually, I didn't have that confidence when I was, you know, changing jobs. And now I definitely want to instill that in other people, in other women, definitely.
And thanks for sharing so candidly. I just want to ask, so what do you feel for you helped you to go from, say, from A to B in terms of now the awareness afterwards, but what was some of the internal processing and what could you see passed on even now that could help that woman who, as she's listening right now, is kicking herself because she feels like she was in exactly the same position?
To be honest, a great mentorship. So I've been surrounded by great mentors. My boss, the person who hired me, actually, later on, after he had me, he's like, oh my word, you undersold yourself so much.
Wow.
And I was happy he did that because he was like, do you know how much you know? And I was like, no. And he's like, your CV doesn't say half of what you were able to tell me in the interview after I prodded you. So definitely my boss was a very big influence in bringing that out of me. And I've got a great mentor as well at work. My boss has, the person who had me has since left, but I've got another mentor who just keeps pushing me and saying, you can do this. And I've since become a lot more confident. I wouldn't say I've reached that place because there's still some areas that I'm like, oh, I don't know if I can do this. but then my friends have also pushed me up and they're like, but a guy would never ask that. I was like, that is actually true. So I've great mentors, to be honest. That's definitely one of the great friends and great mentors.
Sure. Very good. So one of the other perspectives that I read in an article in The Atlantic says this. The problem isn't that women aren't confident, but that confidence in women is not rewarded in the world of work.
Yep.
And I remember reading Michelle Obama's book, Becoming, and she speaks a lot about how the media would portray her. You know, it was so important how she, as the president's wife, the first lady, not the first man, needed to make sure that she showed up in a particular way. She dressed in particular ways, that she wasn't, when she spoke quite passionately about something, she was often seen as aggressive or too masculine or domineering. So I think this thing about confidence not being rewarded is quite a big deal. I've also heard of something called the backlash effect, where women are, they're ready to speak up or they have opinions, but you kind of do that, ask yourself the 10 questions first. Who's in the room when I'm going to say this up? What are they going to think of me once I've said it? And then thirdly, what's going to be the impact after having said this? You're nodding, tell us.
Yeah, I've had to, the backlash effect definitely has played a role in how I react. I've had to have meetings. Sometimes I'm the only female in the room, sometimes in a boardroom sitting there and having to think, how will I come out? Rather than thinking about the message, I'm actually thinking, how will I come out? Will I seem like this, you know, cocky little person who's just able to, you know, and I don't think guys think like that. I don't know, but I don't think they process all of that before they say what they need to say. So I know that that's something I have stressed about before I say something. But yeah, it's not good.
And how have you worked through that? Or is your process simply to, practice 10 times before you go into the room.
I think it's less so now. I think it's I'm a lot more confident than I used to be. I'm still a work in progress, to be fair. There's some issues I'm still dealing with.
As we all are.
But I definitely, I'm a lot more vocal about what I believe and I want to stand for. And I don't like, just because I don't want this whole thing that the loudest person wins. I feel like everybody should be heard.
Absolutely.
And I don't necessarily have to be loud to be heard. I just need to speak my point. So I make it a point. Mm-hmm. If I have something to say, I will say it when I'm given the chance to say it. But I'm not going to leave that room until I'm heard, in a way.
I like that. I'm not going to leave that room until I'm heard, which is, it speaks to a persistence. It speaks to maybe the first time they didn't hear me and now I think, you know, I shy back, because I've seen that. And I mean, I've done it myself, that posturing thing that you do in a meeting. Like maybe you try the first time and if nobody noticed, you're like, oh, okay, well, let me just posture myself down here. Yeah. Kodani, your experience?
One of my jobs, which I had in the past, I experienced it from another woman. So for them, they succeeded to actually silence me. I talk a lot.
Wow.
And when we were working together, the same thing where I would say something when we're in a meeting between us and then suddenly it comes in another meeting and it doesn't belong to me. And then to a point where I stopped talking, where I would speak when spoken to, and leave it at that. And when I was about to leave the organization, I started working with someone else in a different project. And when we were speaking, they're like, I didn't know you were this smart.
I'm wow. Like,
what do you mean? And they're like, you never speak, so I never really think you have any ideas. And for me, from that day, it was more of just know your audience and learn to navigate around. So you're not always going to find people who are ready for you or too ready to listen to you. But at the same time, you just have to push the boundaries. If you fail, just try again and see if it will get you somewhere. And I have to say, I also had to build, to grow within myself, or to get myself to a place where I just believe that if I got it wrong, oops, next time we'll get it right.
Sure.
And it doesn't mean that you should stop.
Very good. Yeah. Very good.
I think one of the things I would like to mention, I mean, for me, my experience was different in the sense that my boss now, a male guy, he's very, very helpful in bringing out the best in me, to the extent that when I go for meetings with him, because he's the senior person, he's the managing director, we'll sit in a room where I might be the only female, and there's a tendency that everybody directs the questions to him or asks him or everything. He's so good at reflecting, directing the questions back to me.
Sure.
To the extent that he even says, actually, Mwansa is my boss. And she's the one who's taking the lead on this project. And if she says no, I can't say yes.
Yeah.
And for me, it goes back to that mentorship aspect where the person who leads you has a very big impact on how you grow as well.
They really do.
And that then gives the responsibility to us. How do we lead others? Do we bring out the best in them? I've learned a lot from my boss in that. So when I'm mentoring others, I want to make sure that they also get the spotlight. That was the most humbling experience I've ever had, where he literally turned around in a room full of guys and turned and says, don't try and convince me whether this is good. Convince her. If she doesn't believe it, I'm not going to believe it.
That is powerful. Firstly, tell us who this guy is off the record, because I think there's just going to be like so many people queuing to be mentored by him. So shout out to him. And I mean, I must say, in one of my other roles, because I have a few roles, I've got a very similar CEO. And he's a male and he does very much the same thing, which I've seen. I mean, just to Kodani's point about sometimes it's our sisters who are trying to silence us in the workplace, which is, I mean, that's even, it's like a double blow, right? Because we're supposed to be fighting together and sometimes we're fighting against each other. But I was in a meeting just this week and it was so interesting to me. There were two people and three of my colleagues, my CEO in my one job being in one of the people, and one of the gentlemen, I would direct questions at him because the project was, I'm closely more aligned to his work in the project. And so I'd look at him and say, so what are your expected timelines with this, and what have you guys learned along the way? And when he'd answer me, even though I was sitting within his direct eye line, he would address his answer to my CEO. And then kind of in the last 2 seconds of his answer, just like give a cursory glance in my direction, even though I was the one who had phrased the question at him. So, I mean, that speaks to an area that they are now calling unconscious bias, yes, which is really that people are doing these things so habitually, so culturally. It's just been such a systemic pattern of behavior that nobody even notices it. Yeah. And in one of the pieces I read, they also mentioned the thing that one of the main things we can do is for people to start calling this out, but especially male counterparts to call it out. But I mean, I think there's even a step before that, which is how will they notice if they are too in their unconscious bias? So with people like your CEO, clearly being aware of it and saying to his colleagues, sorry, it doesn't matter what I think. You ask the person who's really the lead on this, which is powerful. Yeah. It's really powerful.
Yeah.
Kodani, I just want to, something else which has also come up a lot is this concept of the imposter effect. So I know, and I don't know if you ladies can share this experience, even though, I mean, Mwansa, you touched on it a bit earlier, even though you've got years of experience in a certain factor, sometimes you still feel like an imposter when you come to the table or when you're in a certain boardroom. I just want to talk about that a bit, and especially also when I think of younger women, because I know obviously when you're the youngest in the room or the newest in the organization, you will feel like an imposter for the largest amount of time. Any thoughts around that, Kodani, and how especially young women in the workforce can navigate around that?
I think where I'm at, I'm pretty grateful because my experience is totally different currently. In terms of the reason I've grown so fast or so quickly within the organization I'm in right now, it's because I had another male boss who was a great mentor. And then wonderful. I have women as our CEO is a woman, and the way we are, it doesn't feel intimidating at all in terms of how we do things.
Sure.
And in the space I'm working in now, I'm drawn into meetings where it doesn't matter that I'm young. I could be the only black girl in the room, but I'm heard. So it's a different scenario to where I come from, because because we know of how broken the system is.
Yeah.
The people I work with are in the business of trying to change the way the system is. And in other instances, people or clients coming in, you still have that feeling that they would rather listen to the older man in the room than actually look at you. But the same thing of deflecting or saying, please focus on this person, or I have that. So if it's about advocacy, and the people in the room always speaking for those who don't realize that they're acting still with their unconscious biases in a way. So at the moment, I don't have the imposter feeling.
Brilliant.
I'm in a place where I'm allowed to be.
Yo, I'm so excited to hear that. And I mean, you spoke about a lot of things. So it's the advocacy element. It's the countercultural element. It's the understanding the context, understanding the system is broken, and actively trying to redress that. So there's a lot of intentionality that's needed from all of us. At a senior level, really, is where it starts. And I mean, I love your quote. We lost your line for a little bit, but we picked you up and got the bulk of what you were saying. But I loved what you said, that even if I'm the only black girl in the room, I am heard. I have a voice and I am heard. And that, I think, really sums up what it would mean to have those the workplaces that reflect that women have a voice that can be heard. I want to shift gears a little bit, unless, Mwanta, you wanted to chip in, but I wanted to shift gears to, so a lot of, when you ask people about confidence and how to appear more confident, a lot of it is around the image or your brand. People speak a lot about your personal brand, and it's about how you show up, it's about how you dress, it's about how you speak, and I think there's a place, there certainly is a place for all of those. But I mean, in the work with the young women that I am privileged to mentor, I always say to them that confidence starts in your own head first before it starts outside. So if you've already walked into the room telling yourself that, oh, okay, because what we all do is we walk into the room and we scan the room, right? Am I the youngest, oldest, fattest, tallest, shortest, whatever your ist may be. And based on that, we do the power dynamic. I want to speak about how the importance of the physical brand, the outer brand versus the inner brand. And if you ladies have any thoughts around that.
So one of the books I read, which to a great extent was trying to get that out of women, is called Nice Girls Don't Get the Corner Office.
Yes.
And Conscious Mistakes Women Make That Sabotage Their Careers.
Yeah, I know that book very well.
So I remember reading it. And to be honest, I didn't agree with everything about the book.
Because
there was some parts which says, oh, you need to wear red lipstick for you to be noticed.
I remember that.
You need to wear this. And I was just like, no, I'm not going to wear red lipstick. Absolutely. if you don't notice
exactly. Me. Yeah, like
so there are certain aspects. Yes, you definitely need to look confident. Mm. But no matter how much you dress, if you're not confident inside, it will not come out. You'll still be the timid person. Your expression, the way you carry yourself will still be a look of timidity. Whereas, yes, the dress does help, but you also don't want to be recognized for what you wear. That's my belief,
sure.
At least anyway. I don't want to be known as the person who dresses like X.
Yo.
I want to be known as a confident woman.
Come on.
That for me tells me that the confidence has to start from within, and the dressing will just be like an addition to it.
Yes.
And there are extremes where, you know, you start dressing in a certain way to get noticed. And I don't believe in that. You still have to believe your values still have to count. You still have to be that woman who's respectable. And what you have to say is what is more important than how you dress.
Very good. Kodani?
So you would know me from the Mickey Mouse shirts to actually.
Yeah, I've known you a few years when we were working in nonprofits together. Yeah.
I think in my career life, in terms of what I've learned, in terms of how people notice you, is be neat, be professional, and you don't have to be the most fashionable person. You don't have to dress like you're from a Vogue magazine. But look neat enough and professional enough for a person to take you seriously.
Yes. Yep.
It's not about looking all fabulous. I change my hair all the time. I can cut it short. I can have it long.
Yes.
I can look any way, but the difference is I should be neat enough for someone to be able to have a conversation without trying to figure out what is going on with whatever I'm doing.
Yeah.
So I totally agree with what is saying, that it's not about be mindful that you don't become too sexy, that people just focus on your sexiness.
Yo.
But do not run away from being sexy because you're too worried about people thinking of you in a certain way. So just be you, isn't it? And let what's inside be more visible so that people can actually hear you. So just think about, will people hear me or will they be looking at my chest?
Yeah.
Or think about those things.
Hey.
Yes.
So true. Yeah. So true. Lots for us to think about. And guys just throw on a t-shirt and a jeans and he just walks out of the house. Could not be bothered. Yeah, I've got to go through all these layers of who's perceiving me today and what message am I giving out. Yeah. Both of you are touching on such good points. Thank you so much for that. So I want to, we soon will be out of time, but just as we, there's so much still to talk about. There's another quote that I just wanted to throw into the mix, which is someone also from a Forbes article saying, women are likely equally confident, but warier of self-promotion, and for good reason. They may acutely perceive that self-assertion will lead to less acceptance rather than more acceptance. So this thing about, I know I've done the work, but I won't go and necessarily say, well, this was my project and I'm proud of it, because we were taught to walk in humility. Manta's like, yeah, she's got a real life example. So we're told to wait for others to give us the credit, right? And that often makes us seem as we're not confident in our work, but you've got this clash of the one voice, and especially if there's a value system attached to it, which, I mean, for me personally, I believe humility is one of the values that all of us should walk in. But I also have to tape it with, what does that mean in a boardroom when I need to presence myself or position myself for that promotion? How do I go about that?
Mm. I'm a walking example of that, because literally in the last year, so I had a boss when I joined this company. My boss who hired me then left. So then I had a new boss who's my current boss now. And when I was having my first appraisal with him, you know, like after year end, telling me this is what he's going through. So you have to score yourself. Then he looks at your scores. Ooh, and then
those KPIs.
And then he's going through my scores and he's like, why have you scored yourself so lowly?
Wow.
And I had to sit there and I'm like, well, because I did this wrong and did this wrong. So I picked out everything I did wrong. And then he goes, but you also did this and you also did this and you also achieved this and you also achieved that.
Come on.
And he goes, you need to believe in yourself. Woo. And I was like, oh my. Like, seriously. He actually pushed my scores up, because I was so like, it comes from this thing that I shouldn't praise myself. Yes. Somebody else should praise
me.
Yes,
yes.
So I went in with the idea that if I've done a good job, he will tell me I've done a good job. I can't tell myself I've done a good job. So that was the first year he appraised me. This year, I remember we're having our meeting in January. I went prepared. I was I did X, Y, Z. And ABC on top of that. And he literally had to calm me down. I was like, woman. And so for every score I put, I justified it. And I was like, okay, the reason I did this. And there was one score where he actually like, wow, I can't argue with that. But in essence, he taught me that I need to believe in myself and I need to praise myself.
Sure.
And I can tell you, my male colleagues are not thinking twice about blowing the horn about what they've done.
Not at all. Not at all.
I'm thinking there, but I'm like, yeah, no, but it's not humble. It's not, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Sure. So. Brilliant example. I love that real life example. Kodani, you?
I'm still getting there. I think I come from the same school of thought that you wait for other people to actually praise you.
Yes, we do.
But what I learned, I think, was the way I found satisfaction in terms of praise was in how excellent my work is. So at every point, I knew I was giving it my best so that I get the best out of whatever project I'm doing. And what I learned from that was, it doesn't matter how other people talk about you, your work will say the most about you. It's a difficult thing, because there are places where it's easy to actually get to a point where you can praise yourself because of the audience that you have. Yeah. And at times, because of the audience that you have, you'd rather not, because then you'll be looking like you're boastful, or you're looking down on other people's work and things like that. So I haven't gotten there where I can easily say I am doing great on this. I think I find myself more in conversations where I'm talking about what I did wrong more than what I did right. For someone else to say, actually, you did this right. And it's still very difficult, especially when you're a leader of people. It's difficult because you don't know if you're doing it right, man.
Sure.
I hope that's making sense.
Yes, absolutely. No, I can. Yeah, I can totally relate to that. But I mean, I think one of the things that I've also appreciated in what I've been reading up is that the best leaders are often not the ones who are fully convinced that they are doing everything right. They're just fully convinced in what they're setting out to do. And are they happy with a couple of failures along the way? They see it as a natural part of. But I mean, you spoke earlier about this need to be perfect, which I think plays a lot, because then it stops us from doing things sometimes because we're so scared of failing or being perceived in a negative way. And honestly, sometimes it's just about, I believe in this, I'm going to do it. And failing forward is part of the journey, right?
Yeah,
totally.
I'm shouting three questions at you. You give me the first answer that comes to mind. Are you ready? Okay, Kodani, I'm going to start with you because you're all the way out in Cape Town. In 3, 2, 1. A book women should read to foster greater confidence.
Developing the Leader Within, because it's important to lead yourself, by John Maxwell.
And as much as I didn't agree with everything, the book Nice Girls Don't Get the Corner Office definitely had very good points for me.
Your advice to younger working women when it comes to the confidence gap?
Envision where you're going, because if you don't know where you're going, any road will lead you there.
Is find mentors, find people that you can talk to. Not necessarily in your office. They don't have to be your boss. They don't have to work within your space. But find older people who've gone through the working life or whatever whatever business you're running or something, but somebody who can guide you.
Your advice to senior women leaders?
Advocate for other women. Advocate in the boardroom, advocate in the homes. Change the system.
It's to look out for the younger ones. Is to say you can see some of the mistakes they're making and you've made them before, or you what they're going to do. Look out for them and help them grow.
Powerful. Ladies, sure, I know there's so much more we can say on this topic. And if you as a listener think that we haven't covered everything, please send us your question or continue this conversation. You can send your questions to our WhatsApp line on +27 60 921 6977, or follow the conversation on Instagram at Hungry Woman at Work. Mwansa Chokolo and Kodani Nemete, thank you so much for your input today. And here's to us calling each other out in closing the confidence gap.
Thank you. It was good to be here.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for tuning in today. I'm sure you must be feeling as I am, ready to get my confidence on and help others to do likewise. I must say, I really enjoyed the energy in this format, and I think I'm going to make it a regular feature where we'll switch up the episodes between one woman features and roundtable chats. Now, I was asked a question recently about what's the best way to market your brand in a digital age. Because of time, we'll tackle that question in a future episode. But for now, I'd like to take a quick moment to market someone else. On episode 11, I interviewed Miyabo Enyadike, an international fine artist who's managed to turn her passion into profit. Miyabo is running a workshop on how to grow your client base through Facebook and Instagram. It's taking place on Saturday, 13th June at Mandela Square, Sandton City. To register or find out more, check out artmiyabo.com. Well, that's it for this episode. Please remember to subscribe to Hungry Woman at Work on iTunes, Iono FM, Google Podcasts, SoundCloud, or wherever you listen. Till next time, keep thriving without losing your soul.